Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, you may press star 1 from your touch-tone phone if you would like to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I would like to turn the meeting over to Brady Phillips. You may begin.
Good morning. Thank you, Brittany, and good morning to all, and thank you for joining this monthly climate call. And again, this is part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to governments, businesses, academia, and the public to help support informed decision-making. Again, I'm Brady Phillips with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. And during the call, we'll have three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. So during the call, we'll be following along a PowerPoint presentation that you can download at the following website, www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BREFINGS, or the link is in the media advisory on NOAA.gov. Our first presenter today is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the January U.S. Climate Report and the Drought Monitor released today. The next presenter will be Gary McManus, the Oklahoma State Climatologist at the Oklahoma Climatological Survey, who will discuss emerging drought conditions in Oklahoma and the Southern Plains. And our final presenter today will be Dan Collins, a seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide us the latest La Nina update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks over the coming 3 months. Our first speaker will be Jake Crouch from NOAA NCEI. Jake?
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to start off speaking to slide number 2 on the online slide deck, looking at what happened in the U.S. during January 2018. I will not be talking about the global statistics today, as those will not be released until Tuesday of next week. Looking at temperatures across the U.S. during January, we did have a very sharp east-west divide in temperatures. Temperatures were really warm in the west, particularly from the west coast to the Rockies. Nine states did have a top 10 warm month, and we do see on the map on the left that some pockets in the southwest did experience record warmth. It was a different story in the east. Many locations, particularly from the southern plains, the southeast, the midwest, had temperatures that were below average. When we look at the temperatures averaged across the entire contiguous U.S., it did average out on the warm side of the spectrum with a national temperature 2.1 degrees above average. In the east, we did see several really cold temperature outbreaks, particularly early in the month, if you remember the really cold New Year's Eve on the east coast. We did see a mid-month thaw, so those really cold temperatures followed by warm temperatures led to many ice jams, particularly in the northeast, with river flooding associated with those events occurring. Which is unusual for the most recent months. We did have daily cold temperature records, so these are station records on a daily basis. So cold records outpacing warm records, and this has been unusual over the past 2 years, with warm records typically outpacing the cold records. Moving on to slide number 3, looking at precipitation during the month of January. There was a dry month for many locations. The national precipitation total was about a half of an inch below average. We did see below average precipitation across the southwest, southern plains, northern plains, midwest, southeast, and mid-Atlantic. If you notice on the map on the left, we do see some areas shaded in gray across western Oklahoma and parts of west Texas, and that means those locations actually received zero precipitation during the month. So some really dry conditions across the southern plains. And we did see some record dryness across parts of the southeast. And Alabama and New Mexico each had a top 10 dry month. A lot of the dry conditions combined with the warm conditions in the west led to lack of snowpack, particularly across the Sierra Nevadas, Southern Cascades, and Southwest. When it did precipitate, much of the precipitation fell as rain and not snow. The lack of snowpack in this part of the country can cause water resource issues as we move into the warm and dry season in that part of the country, so it's something for us to keep an eye on. We did see a number of snow and ice events impacting the south, So when it did precipitate in the south, that tended to occur when it was fairly cold. We did have snow as far south as Savannah, Georgia, with them receiving their largest single-day snow event since the 1980s. Above-average precipitation was observed across the northwest, parts of the northern high plains, central plains, and in the northeast. Moving into slide 4 to look at the U.S. drought monitor that was released this morning. In conjunction with the really dry month and warm month in the west, we did see drought expand pretty rapidly across large parts of the country. About 36% of the lower 48 is in drought, and this is up about 8.6% since the beginning of the year. We did see some drought improvement, though, in some localized locations. Where it was wet in the northern high plains, central plains, and southeast, drought did improve, but drought conditions got worse across parts of the west, southwest, and southern plains. So those locations where it was dry and those locations where precipitation fell as rain, where we typically expect snow, did see drought worsen. Outside of the contiguous U.S., we did see abnormally dry conditions expand across southern Alaska. We do have below-average snowpack across parts of southern Alaska, and that's associated with the drought depiction here on the map. And we did see some drought improvement across Hawaii. And with that, I will pass it off to Gary, who will talk about drought in the southern plains.
Thanks, Jake, and thanks for having me. As we continue to track this intensifying drought in the southern plains, I want to start with slide number 5. And, of course, when we talk about the southern plains lately, it seems like we could more easily determine when we weren't in drought than when we are, because it's getting a little bit old for this part of the country. But this year we've had an unusual cool season drought intensify. It started in October. So it is a little bit unusual to have this intense of a drought occur throughout the cool season. Of course, it's not as warm, and it is the dry season anyway. So a couple of things have to happen. It has to either be much above normal in temperature or very little rainfall. And in this case, we had a little bit of both October through basically the first 3 weeks of December were much above average in temperature, and in that time we were getting no precipitation. So that combined to really set us on the path to this intensifying drought. And it did follow a significantly wet and cool August across parts of our area, and that will be important as I show you in a little bit. And the current concerns with this drought, since we are in the cool season, would be mainly agricultural. And that really gets into the winter wheat crop, but also fire safety. We have wildfire concerns. And, of course, if the drought continues into the spring, our concerns will start to multiply. It will extend the wildfire season. Normal grain up would stop the wildfire season as we get into spring, but also as we start to water lawns and the evaporation becomes a little bit increased due to the heat, water supply will become a concern. And then, of course, there will be additional agricultural concerns if it does continue into the springtime. As we look at the slide number 6, we can see the percent of normal precipitation for the last 120 days. This is up to February 13th. And it's very easy to see the 0 to 10% of normal precipitation over that 120-day period. And then this really extends back another 10 to 15 days before this. But you can see that wide area across the western half of Oklahoma, out into the Texas Panhandle, Oklahoma Panhandle, southwest Texas. But in reality, most of the southern plains is below normal to some degree. Okay, slide number 7. And we have had record-breaking dry weather. So some areas have just simply gone without rainfall, as Jake alluded to. Plainview, Texas is now on day 131 without a single drop of moisture. Woodward, Oklahoma, 128 days without moisture. Amarillo, Texas, 125 days. These two maps you see from the Oklahoma Mesonet, these are days, consecutive days with less than a tenth of an inch of rainfall in any single day or a quarter of an inch of rainfall in any single day. If you look out across the panhandle, you can see up to 138 days in that region without a tenth of an inch or a quarter of an inch of rainfall. And that, of course, extends farther over into eastern Oklahoma. And in reality, you can also add a couple of days to each of these numbers. But this shows the scope of how long it's been without significant rainfall, not just with those record-breaking areas without rainfall of any sort. So this is the genesis of that drought dating back to early October. Slide number 8, the view from space. This is concerning the Oklahoma Wheat Belt. This is basically a relative greenness map. So in reality, when you look at it, if you see green, that's an area of where the wheat crop has been maturing and doing well. The first picture is from February 2016, which would be considered a normal crop. And at that point, we had the wheat belt showing up very nicely across the western parts of Oklahoma. Those are the main wheat-growing areas of the state. But in February 2018, from last week, you can see very little of that wheat crop is showing up as greening up normally. Now across southeastern Oklahoma, that's the forested area. But the Oklahoma wheat crop is suffering greatly, as is the wheat crop up in Kansas, down in Texas, and across the high plains of Oklahoma, New Mexico, Texas, Kansas, and Colorado. So the wheat crop is one of the main concerns agriculturally at this time. And as we get into slide number 9, the rain-drought fire link, we saw this last year with the northwestern Oklahoma fire complex, which became the worst wildfire in Oklahoma history, burned over 1 million acres in Oklahoma and Kansas together. But the setup is we start off with a wet spring. We follow that with a mild summer, so we have very little summer kill of the vegetation. We follow that up with our cool, wet August, which only intensifies the growth of that vegetation, but also, again, diminishes the kill that we normally see in August. And so when we get into the cool season now, we have lots of fuel available for fires because it's dormant and it has died. So all that fuel is available for these fires. And, of course, as we have the drought conditions that have intensified, that has provided the favorable wildfire conditions. So our concerns right now as we go through the rest of February are mainly dealing with the winter wheat crop, but also the intensifying wildfire conditions across the state of Oklahoma. And that's it for my part.
Thank you, Gary. This is Dan Collins with the NOAA Climate Prediction Center. So I'm going to be leading you through the outlooks for the next 3 months. We'll be beginning with slide number 10, and this is taking a look at the outlook for El Nino Southern Oscillation, or the ENSO outlook. Looking at the image in the upper left, that's the sea surface temperature anomalies, the differences from normal sea surface temperatures for the last 4 weeks. We see that we have below normal temperatures from the central Pacific Ocean all the way to South America and the eastern Pacific Ocean. This is an indicator of the La Nina conditions that we've had through the winter. In the western Pacific, temperatures are above normal, and they're also above normal across the northern Pacific. We're looking at the ENSO forecast in the image in the lower left. This shows probabilities of either La Nina conditions, or that is a cool central and eastern Pacific Ocean, with the blue bars, the probabilities of El Nino conditions or above normal sea surface temperatures in the central and eastern Pacific with the red bars, and near normal would be the gray bars, indicating that temperatures are close to the normal conditions in the central Pacific Ocean. So we expect the current La Nina conditions, which are the cooler sea surface temperatures, to decrease rapidly. You can see the probabilities drop off below 50% in just by March, April, May, the coming three-month season. And so neutral conditions, meaning that the temperatures are closer to normal or below the threshold of a half a degree Celsius below normal, that is closer to zero than a half a degree Celsius. So we expect ENSO neutral conditions to be likely for the March, April, May period and thereafter. And those conditions should carry through the entire summer. So then moving to slide number 11, we can start to take a look at the temperature and precipitation outlooks for the United States. This is the monthly forecast on slide 11 for March. On the left, you see the temperature probabilities, the probabilities that temperatures will be above, below, or possibly near normal. We divide years into three categories. Years, one-third of the years are considered below normal, one-third of the years are considered near normal, and one-third are considered above normal. So what you see is when probabilities, when it's likely, more likely than that temperatures will be in either the below or above normal category, below normal in the blue. We see a area where temperatures are likely to be below normal from the Pacific Northwest into the Northern Rockies and across into the Northern and Central Plains. We see some probabilities exceeding 50% that temperatures will be below normal. We see areas where temperatures are likely to be above normal in the Southwest, from Southern California, across Arizona and New Mexico into Southern Texas. And we also see an area of likely above normal temperatures for the Northeast and also for the Florida Panhandle. We see that temperatures are also likely to be above normal for Western and Northern Alaska. Sea ice is less than normal in this area, and probabilities the temperatures will be above normal exceed 50% in that region of Alaska. On the right, you see the precipitation outlook. This shows, similar to the temperature outlook, the probabilities that precipitation for the March month will be above normal or in the top third of years, below normal in the bottom third of years. So there's an area in the Northern Rockies into the Northern Plains and south into Central Rockies that indicates that their precipitation for March is likely to be above normal. There's another area in the Southeast where precipitation is likely to be above normal for March. And then we see from Southern California across southern portions of the Southwest into Southern Texas, an area where precipitation is likely to be below normal, as well as in the Florida Panhandle, the Florida Peninsula. If you look at Alaska, you can see that precipitation is likely to be below normal in southern portions of the state, from the Aleutian Islands through the Alaska Panhandle. And in the northern and northwestern portions of the state, precipitation is likely to be above normal for March. I'm going to move on to slide number 12. This shows the seasonal forecast. We forecast for the three-month season from March through April and into May. This shows on the left the temperature outlook, probabilities that the temperatures over the three-month season will average above or below normal. You can see there's a large area where temperature is likely to be above normal from the California, Southern California, across the Southwest and Great Basin regions through the Central and Southern Plains into the Southeast. And then you can see that temperatures are also likely to be above normal up the East Coast all the way to New England. Temperatures the probability that temperatures will be above normal are as high as 60 and 70% in parts of the Southwest. This forecast is influenced by lingering La Nina conditions and its impacts, and it's also influenced by longer-term decadal trends in temperature, which are particularly strong in that Southwest region. Temperatures are also likely to be above normal in Western and northern portions of Alaska, similar to the monthly outlook. Temperatures, though, are likely to be below normal in southeastern Alaska, as well as parts of the Pacific Northwest, across the Northern Rockies, and into parts of the Northern Plains. On the right, we see the seasonal outlook for March, April, May for precipitation. Precipitation is likely to be below normal across much of the southern U.S., from California, across the Southwest, Southern Plains, and then along the Gulf Coast. Probabilities for below normal exceed 50% in some parts of New Mexico and Texas. Precipitation is likely to be above normal across the northern Rockies into the northern plains, as well as into the Midwest and the northeast of the U.S. This pattern is largely influenced by the lingering La Nina conditions. We see that for Alaska, precipitation is likely to be above normal in the northwest of the state, and we see that precipitation is likely to be below normal for the southern portion of the state. Moving on to slide number 13, we can look at the tendency in drought conditions over the United States. This map refers back to the drought monitor, which also comes out at the same time. And so this shows over the next three-month period, slightly different period than for the seasonal temperature and precipitation outlooks, beginning with today, the next 3 months, whether the drought is likely to improve, whether drought may develop, whether drought would persist, or in some cases where drought may be not as severe, where drought might be removed. So in the yellow, you see areas where drought development is likely, where the drought is expected to expand. You see that in California, Nevada, parts of Oregon, and southwestern Idaho. You see persistence of areas that were already in drought over the next 3 months from southern California across the southwest into the southern and central plains. Some small areas that had not previously been in drought in southern Texas are expected to develop drought. Because of short-term precipitation over the next week, as well as the monthly and seasonal outlooks for precipitation, we can see that to the east of this region, from northern Texas into eastern Oklahoma and parts of the central Mississippi Valley, the drought will either improve or in some cases will be likely to be removed, as well as for areas of the southeast that are in drought. There are some areas that will be drought is likely to remove that are shown in green. We can see that there are some areas where drought development appears likely from northern Florida into southeastern Georgia and southern South Carolina. In the northern plains, again, dependent on the precipitation and temperature outlooks, drought is likely to persist in northern and eastern parts of the Dakotas, whereas drought is likely to improve in eastern Montana and southwestern North Dakota and western South Dakota. This concludes my portion of the presentation today, and I'll turn it back over to Brady.
Thanks, Dan. Again, we'll now move to taking questions from the call participants. And again, please, if you do know, please be sure to clearly indicate who you'd like to answer the question, or if not, we can figure it out. Brittany, can you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question and queue up the first question? Thank you.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your phone and unmute your line and record your name clearly when prompted. If you would like to withdraw your question, you can press star 2. And our first question comes from Brian Sullivan. Your line is now open.
Hey, thanks, everyone. I think this is probably more for Dan, but you can all probably take a stab at it. I have two questions for you. One is, do you see anything long-term that gives you any kind of hope that the drought will improve, particularly in California as well as across the plains? And then secondly, with the three-month seasonal outlook looking for below normal rainfall in Texas and Oklahoma, how do you see the drought improving or removal there from the drought, the seasonal drought outlook? The two things don't seem to match. Why is that?
Okay, sure. First, I'll take your second question. The improvement and removal in parts of northeastern Texas, eastern Oklahoma, and then into the Mississippi Valley, that's largely dependent on the forecast for precipitation over the next week or two.
Okay.
So there is a significant precipitation event expected in the near term. This outlook, unlike the seasonal outlook, begins today. The seasonal outlook, the period, three-month period, begins with March 1st, so it doesn't actually include this precipitation event. You can see some resemblance of the pattern, but as you noted, this area of Oklahoma and Texas are in below normal for the seasonal outlook. Part of this region is in an area we term as equal chances in the March outlook. That just simply means we don't have a clear picture as to whether it'll be above, near, or below normal for March as a whole. But in the next couple of weeks, we're expecting precipitation in that area. For California and the West, we, as you can see, expect over the next 3 months that drought is more likely to develop than improve, and it's likely to persist in those areas where drought is already entrenched. This is related to both the seasonal outlook currently that shows likely below normal precipitation for the next 3 month period. We also produce seasonal outlooks going out several seasons beyond this point and through summer. Over the next couple of seasons, April, May, June, May, June, July, precipitation continues to be more likely to be below normal than above normal in the West. And so, unfortunately, we don't have an outlook that indicates a good chance of increased precipitation for those drought areas in the West beyond the next 3 months. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Laura Gagel from Live Science. Your line is now open.
Yay, this is Laura Gagel. Thanks for taking my question. I guess this is more for Dan Collins. You mentioned that the forecast is heavily influenced by the lingering La Nina conditions, and then you mentioned that the long-term decadal conditions also contributed. Can you just explain what that means? I'm not quite sure.
Sure. So the La Nina tends to, at this point in the year as well as in the winter season somewhat, lead to more of a chance of below normal precipitation across the southern United States, and it leads to more of a chance of above normal precipitation across much of the northern parts of the United States. The pattern for La Nina precipitation is quite similar to the seasonal outlook pattern that you would see on slide 12. Temperature, La Nina has a tendency to produce more likely below normal temperatures across parts of the northern United States, especially in the Northwest and into the Midwest. La Nina tends to produce above normal temperatures across much of the southern United States. You can see some resemblance of La Nina in the temperature pattern. But in addition to La Nina, there's the impacts of long-term trends. What we do is we look at the last 10 or 15 years of temperature and precipitation, and we compare it to the long-term normal temperature and precipitation for individual regions. And so recent decades have been generally warmer than previous decades. And that influences our seasonal outlook. This is particularly true in the Southwest, and it's less so in other regions. So you can see that for the temperature outlook, the probabilities of above normal temperatures have increased substantially, over 60% in a large area of the Southwest, which is partly influenced by long-term decadal trends. Precipitation trends are more limited at this time of year. In some of our later outlooks, there's a trend for below normal precipitation in the Northwest, and so there are later seasons where in the summer where we have an indication of below normal in the Northwest from long-term trends. Also, above normal in the Northeast is partly attributable to decadal trends. Thanks.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. One moment as we wait for any additional questions.
And I'll also put out the call. Are there any follow-up questions? If so, please press star one.
And we do have a question from Patricia Kitchen from Newsday. Your line is now open.
So much for doing this. So for the, and this would be for Dan, so for next month for the March outlook for temperature, I've been reading about this sudden stratospheric warming event, and I'm just wondering, is that, would that be affecting the colder than normal temperatures for the Northwest, more the Northwest and sort of the, you know, the central area there?
Thank you for the question. The March outlook and the below normal in the Northwest and the larger area of above normal precipitation in the Northwest is more influenced by the Madden-Julian oscillation.
Quickly,
or maybe you would know. M-A-D-D-E-N. Julian is J-U-L-I-A-N oscillation. The Madden-Julian oscillation is active over the Western Pacific Ocean currently, and that's a shorter-term oscillation of several weeks. So the current active MJO will potentially lead to more of a tendency for below-normal temperatures in the Northwest and into the central U.S., as well as precipitation.
Okay, great. Thank you. And so could you speak about this stratospheric warming event I've been reading about and what effect it might have?
Right.
Is that anything that's taken into consideration for this outlook, or is that one of those things that sort of is more of a pop-up kind of thing?
It has, to some extent, been considered for the outlook. It does increase, in some sense, the uncertainty in the March outlook. On the shorter time scale of a monthly outlook, we have various phenomena that can influence the pattern. The sudden stratospheric warming, as I'm sure you've read, is a relatively rare event compared to, say, La Nina or El Nino or Madden-Julian oscillation. It has been known to lead to possibly a cold air outbreak over the U.S. So it does not contradict the March outlook. The predictability from the sudden stratospheric warming, the ability to predict the resulting impact on temperatures over the U.S. and what's particularly is low is what I was going to say. The predictability is low. The timing of changes to temperature in the U.S. are what is particularly difficult to predict from the sudden stratospheric warming.
Right. Does it have potential, though, to warm, like, areas of the Northeast? I'm in New York, so that's the area mostly of interest here. So
I would have to get back to you on if there is a local impact that would be expected from the sudden stratospheric warming.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd love to hear about that. So, okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Craig Miller from KQED. Your line is now open.
Okay, thank you. And I'm sorry, I tuned in quite late, and I'm wondering if there perhaps was already a discussion about the persistent high-pressure ridge that's been parked over the West Coast, causing us to be exceptionally dry and warm throughout this winter. Whether there's any sense that this is becoming a permanent wintertime fixture out here, and if so, what long-term trends might be driving that?
This is Jake. I'll take a stab at that. The pattern that you're referencing has been present pretty commonly over the past couple of winters, you know, going back 5, 6, 7 years. You know, it wasn't necessarily the case last year. Remember, it was pretty cool and wet in the West. I haven't seen any research that's kind of looked at the some of the drivers behind that, or if this is a trend that is expected to continue in terms of this local synoptic feature. But it is having consequences, as you've mentioned. It's another really warm winter in the West, a fairly dry winter, especially across southern parts of the West, But in terms of what's driving this and is this expected to continue into the future, I don't have that answer at this time.
Mm. Do you know anybody who's actually might be looking into that besides Daniel Swain?
I don't know in particular who might be looking into that. I know that Marty Horling at a NOAA office in Boulder tends to look at these synoptic scale events and what might be driving them, but I don't know if he's looking at this event in particular, though.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. I'll put out last call for questions. And if there are none in the next couple of seconds, I'll wrap up the call. Okay, I'll end the call by giving everyone a few reminders. So the January Global Climate Highlights will be released on Tuesday, February 20th, around 11 a.m. So that's right after the holiday on Monday. The February U.S. Climate Highlights will be released on March 7th, and the February Global Climate Highlights will be released on March 19th. Also, in lieu of next month's climate call, the National Weather Service will issue its annual U.S. Spring and Flooding Outlook during a separate media call, which will be on Thursday, March 15th at 11 a.m. A separate media advisory will be sent out for that event. And again, that's really focused on, you know, looking at snowpack and either flooding or drought, particularly in the West. And finally, an audio of this call will be posted on the Media Advisory site within about 60 to 90 minutes of this call. In the interim, if you have any additional further information needs, please email me at Brady, B-R-A-D-Y, .Phillips, P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S, at NOAA.gov. This concludes the call. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. You may all disconnect at this time.